are just against homeless people for being, for their existence. And Mayor Rodkin should live out by his principles more. I mean, he's supposed to be a Marxist socialist. You know, a socialist is a person who believes that society has some sort of responsibility for all members of society, rich and poor, upstanding citizens, and those who run afoul with the law. The concept that each person has needs, and the more that we meet the needs of every member of our society, the more likely we're going to have a cohesive society lacking social problems. Mayor Rodkin seems to mouth this on one point, but his actions appear to be completely against homeless people, for the right to exist. And indeed, that most recent article in the Sentinel about the stairwell, did you talk about that yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh, there's some neighbors that are complaining.
Before you do,
yes,
we have a distinguished passing visitor who's actually illegally eating, no, he's probably legally eating some food, Skidmarks Bob, who will be playing tonight at a concert benefit at which only the upper crust are invited. Right, Bob? Mm-hmm. Those with $8 to $10?
I didn't put it together.
Nah, but
I'm just playing.
He denies everything.
Yes, well, Bob, you had
another mic here.
Oh, there is another mic. Well,
wow, we're real high-tech here.
Kind of hidden here.
There we go. How's that?
Sounds good. So you've got a PSA here you wanted to...
Today Free Radio Santa Cruz is going to be tabling downtown near across from Woolworths. So just hold it like that. Across from Woolworths... probably this afternoon, whenever the lazy programmers and people get it together to go on out there. And, of course, we have our voicemail at 427-4523 now that people can call and leave messages about, you know, maybe the Bathrobe Spear Show.
Yeah.
Another thing is Farmers Market is going to the mat with the city this Friday at 3:30. They're going to see if they can get another use permit happening. No, it's Tuesday, 3:30, City Council. I talked to some of the farmers on Wednesday. There was an article. This is kind of funny. There's an article in San Jose Mercury that came out Wednesday when the farmers market happens about the farmers market, because the issue came up at downtown association meeting on the Tuesday before that. Well, the Sentinel didn't print it until Thursday after the farmers market. So, of course, people going downtown to the farmers market couldn't read the Sentinel and then have questions about it, because most of the people didn't even know about it. I went and questioned people at the farmer's market about what's going on. They don't know what's going on. So then I questioned some of the farmers, and they're starting their own coalition of some sorts, and they are, I believe the city is backing them in this effort, although Downtown Association has pulled their sponsorship from the farmer's market, and they want them to either move to Sunday and another location or to stop all together. And on Sunday, the farmers are in another city doing farmers market activities, selling farmers market stuff. They have other places to be, so the Downtown Association has pulled their sponsorship, which I think is a good thing, because I don't think the farmers need them.
The Downtown Association's sponsorship of the farmers market, Bob, has had an interesting history with respect to Food Not Bombs that you've been active with since the beginning. Indeed, wasn't there a lot of periodically harassment of Food Not Bombs, and even harassment of merchants who wanted to give food to Food Not Bombs by the Downtown Association's management?
Oh, yeah. You're probably talking about New Leaf Market, who is one of the bigger stores downtown now, who I feel always uncomfortable when the guy looks at me and says, "Have you checked your pack-in?" So, but as far as that's
concerned...
What about
the piss test? You do your piss test.
There was a Metro article in the small news blurbs that come out in the Metro article about a week ago, mm-hmm. that talked about, it said Food for Bums, talked about Food Not Bombs. They interviewed, the woman who works for the Downtown Association and the Farmers Market. I forget her name.
Lori Henning.
Lori
Henning, yeah.
And she said there was a problem. Food Not Bombs was the problem. That there were certain merchants on the mall that were finding shoplifting items, items shoplifted. And so I went to her and did a little investigative reporting and asked her point blank, what stores were they on tape? And she said, Pizza My Heart. So, okay, so I went down to Pizza My Heart and talked to the manager, who I believe his name is Matt, and he told me on tape that it is not a farmer's market problem, that things do disappear. Some of the condiments and cheeses do disappear every single day, not just on Wednesday, but every day. And he says it's a downtown problem. It's not a farmer's market problem. It's not a Food Not Bombs problem. It's a downtown problem. So right there, obviously, they're looking for the scapegoat, being the farmer's market or, say, Food Not Bombs. But Food Not Bombs is relentless. They're not going to move. They're at Cathcart and Pacific every Wednesday and Thursday now at 4 p.m.
Really? How about Feed the People? Are they still out there all the rest of the week? Or?
Yes, they are for the rest of the week, I believe. I don't know their schedule exactly, what times they are feeding, but you can call, 425-FEED. Mm-hmm. I think that's the number to find out more about it.
Yeah, Food Not Bombs and Feed the People have occasionally been at odds in the past. How are they doing now in terms of their relations?
I think they're working closer, a little closer together. Feed the People gets a Dwala on certain days, and they'll bring it down. And then, you know, Food Not Bombs gets an overabundance of vegetables sometimes. Maybe not from New Leaf Market anymore, but from other places. And we give it to Feed the People, too, as well.
Mm-hmm.
People can call Food Not Bombs at 425-3345.
And volunteer to cook, serve, prepare food, donate money, work on flyers,
yes,
do things of that sort. What, you serve, what now, 4 or 5 days a week in 2 different locations?
Yes, it's Wednesday and Thursday downtown, Cathcart Pacific at 4, and then we got Saturday and Sunday at River and Josephine at 1 p.m., and, of course, a food giveaway at noon at the La Familia Center.
On Monday?
Yeah, on Monday.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, the history of the farmer's market, and I guess that was the subject that I really wanted to kind of, you know, dig a little deeper into here, is interesting, particularly with regard to Food Not Bombs. I guess the farmers market has moved twice. It originally became set up in the Ford's parking lot area that was devastated by the earthquake and became a kind of a public gathering square in the Bush's Iraqi genocide war back in 1991. Farmers market got set up there, I guess, in 91 or 92, or I'm not sure quite when it started.
It was right after the earthquake, as a matter of fact, because of the farmers market. That's what revitalized downtown, and that's what saved downtown, was the farmer's market. And now Downtown Association is through with them. They have their chain stores on the mall. They have their Blockbuster and Starbucks, and so they're saying, move along, move along. We want to gentrify the mall more. That's what I see. And I see the Sentinel playing a part in disinformation and those tactics. Thank you, Karen Clark.
let's talk about Karen Clark's stories in the Sentinel. She's been covering the farmers market. The last time I was aware of this issue was, I guess, at a city council meeting about a week or two before I left town, and I heard Mike Rotkin poo-pooing the whole situation, saying he's the mayor. Of course, he said, well, there's no real problem here. The farmers market is not going to end. There's no crisis. Is that still the case, or has the situation changed?
As far as the city, or?
Well, as far as, I mean, should we be alarmed enough to go to the city council meeting at 3:30? I mean, what, is it something that poor people and advocates for civil rights for poor people should keep their eyes on?
I think it's definitely true, because at the farmer's market you can use food stamps, and you can get good organic food, not only from Food Not Bombs, but from farmer's market as well. And I think it plays a significant part in the community and alternative communities that we have here in town, and we need to bring that out more and not rely on New Leaf Market or Safeway or all these people that have stuff like sprayed by methyl bromide, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to cut off the whole alternative communities that are here in Santa Cruz, and all the people I talk to, the Santa Cruz Farmers Market has been pretty much nation or throughout California has been renowned with all the farmers. It's like, that's the best place to be. Most farmers have to set up behind a shopping center and a parking lot, and it's just like a few people trickle in and out. But Santa Cruz, it's an event. People come down, Mr. Twister comes down, you know, even get a few musicians to come down.
Mm,
people
just
table.
Kidding again?
Just kidding. Mm-hmm. the people table, you know, Free Radio Santa Cruz with table down there. You got Prisoners Rights Coalition. You got No Guns is tabling down here doing stuff. And then people have community. They build community. They talk, and they talk about some of the issues in town. And Downtown Association doesn't want that happening. And I think people like Karen Clark, who write these stories, why is she always the one covering the homeless issue? I've always asked that question. Why is she always bringing up excrement and defecation in her articles? And she's always downplaying, and she never gets the story right. She never goes to the people that, like the whole thing with City Hall, she never talked to the City Hall people about what the issues were. She just talked to Mike Rodkin. Of course, Mike's going to tell the truth, isn't he?
Well, I guess the next question I have for you is the same one. Is the farmer's market in danger? In other words, I agree with you. The farmer's market is certainly a good thing, and it's certainly something we all want to see keep going. But Rodkin has assured us that, hey, if the merchants withdraw their support, well, then we're going to keep on going with it. Mm-hmm. Is there a need for people to show up on Tuesday because there's a real threat to the farmer's market?
I think it is. I think it's part of our community, and just like anything else, people need to show up and talk their opinion. Even if you want the farmer's market to move, I'd say show up. You know, it's part of the community, and people need to have concern. As far as the Downtown Association, the only pull that they have is a political-type pull. They don't have an ordinance pull as of yet, although the city is going to have to renew their use permit, and where that's going to be, I don't know.
By there, you mean the farmer's market's use permit?
Yes, the farmer's market's use permit.
Is there actually opposition to renewing it, as far as you know?
Just from the Downtown Association so far.
What about on the council?
I don't know much about where the council people stand. I know that most of the people are for the farmer's market. I guess we'll find out on Tuesday what's going on. But the farmers are organizing, and they want to start. They don't need sponsorship of Downtown Association. They're doing it themselves. They said they can deal with you know, whatever. They don't need Lori Hennings there to do whatever she does, put up the little signs and stuff like that.
Lori Hennings and her confederate, her underling, I've had some bad experiences with her in terms of not only their refusing telling Food Not Bombs that they couldn't pick up food there, and telling merchants that if they gave food, they'd be excluded from the farmer's market. Mm-hmm. There was a long story in La Gazette of 1994 by Celine Pascal on this issue that was really quite revealing, and I actually did some. I was present when Candlelight Kim Argula, Food Not Bombs activist who was very active in the last three or four years here, but is no longer in town, was demanding answers from Lori Hennings, and I guess maybe you were there too. I don't know if you heard that.
Yeah, I heard some of that.
And she would, you know, they, in essence, they're trying to, you know, discourage groups like Food Not Bombs. They seem to be trying to regiment the farmers market, the Downtown Association, and they also attempted to what? Evict No Guns. I guess earlier, it was either earlier this year or late last year. Mm-hmm. They sent the cops in, and you know, said, and it was, if you don't leave, you know, we're going to have you arrested. And
mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's what's happening.
No Guns is a woman who has a sort of a stand concerned with what were her issues, mainly Native American and peace issues? Or?
Nuclear waste issues and stuff. She also does a Lighthouse Report here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and, which is a very interesting news show that's mm-hmm. done on Sunday afternoons. as far as the gentrification that's happening downtown, that along with, you know, Sergeant Seeley and all the cops in the back parking lot telling people they can't sit in public place is what they've been doing as
which
well.
Which is illegal, that is to say, which is not the law at all. It is legal for people to sit except 10 feet from a shop and 50 feet from an ATM or change dispersing machine, or 4 feet from a phone or fountain.
They're charging people with conduct unbecoming.
Conduct unbecoming was the previous law used to harass homeless protests and also to harass people who were sitting on the mall that they wanted to remove before the 1994 downtown ordinances. And I guess Wanton Dave Jacobs, an activist who went to jail on 16 separate misdemeanors, and I think fought them all back successfully mainly through his own legal work. He was constantly being harassed under this law and other laws. And I guess Red Top Robert Flory, who's currently with the City Hall Sleepers protest, has also gotten many of these so-called conduct tickets. And I guess, well, you yourself are a musician, Bob, and you've been, you know, singing songs about shoplifting at the Bookshop Santa Cruz. What kind of talk is that, man?
Well, I've changed it mostly to Crown Books and Blockbuster now, but Bookshop Santa Cruz has that corporate mentality as well.
Well, I have a
anyway.
Yes, yes. Well, Bookshop Santa Cruz is, of course, run by a former mayor and city council member, Neil Coonerty, who couldn't seem to get it together to, well, he got it together to pass these anti-homeless downtown ordinances. And I have a personal problem with Neil in the sense that it's more political, but he wrote a letter that encouraged the judge to put me in jail. And I mean, actually,
thank you, Neil.
I mean, we got to say, you know, the man is forthright. He certainly gives his opinion, but you're not supposed to send such letters to the judge as ex parte communications. And so that was improper, and it was improper that the judge read it, and it was improper that the judge didn't disqualify himself. And I spent a lot of my time in jail trying to find a lawyer to file a disqualification motion, and I could never do that, unfortunately. But the farmer's market then is going to be the issue at 3:30 at City Council on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
That's Tuesday the 24th coming up. And I'm sorry, the 23rd. Tuesday the 23rd. That's probably the last City Council meeting until September, because I believe the council's going on vacation in August.
Oh, wow.
So they're going to be
out of town.
Maybe
they'll leave us alone for a while, right?
They'll leave you alone. They'll let the police take over and do what they need to do. You've heard about this big networking party on the beach coming up.
Yes, I did. I might go to that.
I'm really going to encourage people to go to this networking party July 22nd, Monday. The day before the city council meeting is the networking party. So, you know, whoop it up at the networking party and then go in and support the farmers market on Tuesday. And in the meantime, of course, every night and every day, if you can, spend a little time at the City Hall Sleepers Protest. Bring a cup of coffee, bring a donut, bring a blanket, bring a book, bring something down there. Bring yourself, bring a friend, because they need to have this continued support. I've always thought that it's stupid to locate a vigil at City Hall. It's way the hell out of the way, and nobody gets to see you, and you get harassed by the police, and frankly, but...
And nobody listened to you.
You know, but they're there, and they have stayed there, and they've got to be given the credit for staying there. I mean, I prefer that they set their asses down in front of Crown Books. I think it would make a lot more sense, and they'd get 15 times the publicity, and it would become major very quickly. But you know, I like to talk, and they like to act, and so let's support them.
Don't forget about the Friday March, every Friday that's sponsored by the Revolutionary Coalition to protest the sleeping ban, and that meets at 6 o'clock at the town clock, and gather together, and then march down Pacific Avenue at the height of shoppers on the mall.
The shoppers' frenzy will be interrupted by a brief protest today at 6 o'clock. Of course, you can also show up early and do some volunteer work with Free Radio Santa Cruz. Programmers are going to be tabling at Woolworth's, in front of Woolworth's on Soquel Avenue, sometime afternoon till 4 or 6.
Yeah, till about 6 or so. We got stickers now. We got T-shirts free with a $3 donation.
Hey, I want one. I want one.
$3.
We have lots of new information.
Hey, I love it.
I think we got the story that was printed in the Sentinel recently in the Spotlight about Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you could talk to some of the programmers there and enjoy it. And, hang out.
What about musicians, Bob? Are musicians getting the shaft on the mall? Is there any... You were having numerous problems with disturbing the peace tickets, as was co-musician Phil Free. Have you made your peace with the police?
No.
Or vice versa?
Actually, I was playing on the mall last night, and I was contacted by Officer No Nameplate, and so I had to ask him, what's your name? And he said, well, people call me Bill. And I said, well, what's your last name? And he said, well, my name's Roy. So Officer Roy, he kind of said that low. He didn't want me to know. He's a new cop on the mall, and he came up, stood next to me, and he started reading my lyrics. I have a little lyric sheet sometimes on a new song that I'm covering, one in particular called Downtown.
Which you may perhaps do a brief rendition of.
You can come to the benefit tonight.
All right.
Support the City Hall Sleepers.
Excellent. Coming here downtown at the benefit tonight. Yeah.
Anyway, he came up and he was looking at my lyrics and then he left. And Alibaba called him over again. Alibaba, I don't know what his trip is, but he keeps calling police on us. He did that on the 4th of July while we were out there. Phil did his rendition of the Star Spangled Banner and got the cops called on him. It was 4th of July. Of course, it's a little differently written than the normal Star Spangled
Original lyrics,
Banner.
Yeah.
Called the cops on us, and then we were told to stop. Last night, the cops came over to me and said said that Alibaba said that I said had something to do, you say, with dick or balls. And I said, well, wait a minute, I don't have any songs that have dick or balls in it. And so the riffraff on them all listening to that, oh, they loved it. They just started screaming it all over and over. And anyway, the cops finally left, and I was left alone again. But they always come along and make sure. Well, you know, why don't you just tone it down there, Skidmark? Just tone it down a little, you know, just tone it down. It's okay. You can have your free speech. You just got to be quiet about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Anyone has a right to free speech who can who owns a newspaper. No question about it.
Just like it's all right to be homeless. You just can't sleep, urinate, defecate, drink in public, share free food.
Well, in Santa Cruz, we seem to have gotten that problem licked. What's the story? Is there much chance of any renewance of repression, a renewal of repression around the free food situations, or has that been pretty much resolved?
Well, here in Santa Cruz, the free food thing is, you know, it's always been an issue. They just print disinformation in some of the local papers around here. Food Not Bombs is going strong. They're getting the garden coming back at River and Josephine, although in Whittier, people are waiting for to hear court cases on that case. Long Beach, two people were cited for serving free food. And, of course, in Canada, there was a riot where there was 2,000 people involved, and then the next day, the SWAT team came in and arrested 4 Food Not Bombs volunteers, 3 of them on pot charges because they had a plant in their house, and 1 of them on a rioting charge because that person was at the riot, and thus making Food Not Bombs, trying to make Food Not Bombs a violent organization by doing that. I haven't heard the update on that. I don't know. Maybe you have something
new on
that.
Quebec City, yeah. I haven't heard much of an update, except at the time I heard that they refused to mention the name Food Not Bombs in the papers because they felt it was a subversive organization that would only be encouraging more of the same kind of activity. The riot, I understand, happened because police moved in on a national holiday, St. Somebody's Day.
Was that what it was?
Yeah, and Food Not Bombs was serving free food, and the police tried to close it all down, and people became so angry they crossed the street to the seat of the government there, the Capitol building, and apparently caused some property damage. Well, I guess the motto is, if they fuck with your human rights, on occasion people respond with anger and take it out against the symbols of that authority, which is the buildings and the property of the state. And I think that certainly, you know, none of us really likes violence much. I don't like violence, and I doubt you do, Bob. And I know Becky here is a big violence fan. I can see you're getting excited over there.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, the fact is violence against individuals by authorities is ongoing.
Yeah.
That repression is a form of constant violence. And sometimes the reaction to that has to be, is for some people, a violent one. And certainly those of us who are more enlightened, you know, it's hard for me to say. You know, I believe in nonviolence, but I'm not really a chapter and verse Gandhi type person. I mean, I believe in some circumstances I can see that violence has justification. Not personally, I don't do that. But when other people do it, I understand it. In fact, Gandhi himself, I believe, said that nonviolent resistance is the best way. But better than no resistance is violent resistance to injustice.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't agree with Jim Costner and his armed revolution theories and all that. And he goes off about it in Revolutionary Coalition. I mean, I think it's all good that what he's doing with the Revolutionary Coalition. Personally, I think marching down the mall is, I don't know. I mean, we've been there and we've done that. I think those people's energy would better well spent helping Food Not Bombs maybe do the same thing that they're trying to do down on the mall. I mean, they're feeding people, and it's building community too, not just going through and irritating people on the mall. But of course, there is a time for that too. I don't think they should do a march every week, but that's their issue, and that's what they want to do. That's just my opinion. So if you want to help out Food Not Bombs, call them at 425-3345.
And if you want to help feed the people, call them at 425-FEED-3333. Both of these groups feed people, and both of them also help the City Hall sleepers protest.
And I'm out of here.
You're out of here. Thank you very much,
Bob. Come to the mall. We'll be tabling today, this afternoon, and talk to Free Santa Cruz programmers.
And you'll be able to, of course, hear Bob.
Get program guides. No, I won't be playing it. Oh, it's right.
Tonight. That's Just Kidding. We'll be playing tonight at the Pacific Cultural Center. That's at 1307 Seabright at 7 o'clock tonight. And then, of course, tomorrow on Saturday at 11, if you want to get your butt over to San Jose and you have a vehicle, let me know at 423-HUFF, and I will fill it up for you with people who want to go to the San Jose Community Homeless Alliance weekly meeting. And that's at First Christian Church, 80 North 1st Street. Phone number 345-2353. And then again, of course, on Monday, on July 22nd, from 7 to 10, there's this networking party on the beach, potluck, Live Oak Beach Bonfire. Starts at 7 at right behind the Crow's Nest on 7th Avenue, and then it proceeds onto the beach for merriment and excitement, possibly even some illegal sleeping or other kinds of illegal activities that don't involve sleeping or other kinds of legal activity. Who knows what they're going to do? And if you want information about that, you call Mike Witte at 469-4930. That's a networking potluck party. Just bring some firewood, bring some food, bring some guitars, bring some drums, bring whatever you got. Sodas, munchies, attractive sexual partners, you name it. Then on Tuesday at 3:30, City Council will be meeting, and City Council is considering whether to extend or regrant the use permit of the farmer's market, subject to some controversy. Now, show up and support them. That's what Skidmark's Bob says. Skidmark's Bob says that it's good enough for me. I think it's important to show up. We have another half hour here. You're listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides on 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm your host, back from the big house, Bathrobe's Peer Robert Norse. I am back in town. I will probably be speaking tonight at the benefit for the City Hall Vigil to Legalize Sleep, the City Hall Sleepers Protest. And with me in the studio is beggar backer Becky Johnson. I'd had invited Rolling Thunder Michael Sheridan, sometime River Street refugee, to come on down and kind of join me as well and join us as well here, but Rolling Thunder is rolling around somewhere else at the moment, or thundering in some other quarter. He's still interested in local issues. I feel he has a very good national and international perspective that I'd like to see him on the air. And he's being a truant, and he's not around. So if he's listening to the show, I invite him to come on down or consider joining me on Monday. Indeed, anyone can join the show on Monday who has something to say about civil rights for the poor, nationally, locally, state level, in Mississippi, you name it. Give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we will get together. Also, we're hoping to hear from Lighthouse Linda LeMaster. Linda LeMaster is staunch chairperson of Housing Now in Santa Cruz, which is another independent group concerned with rights for housing, obviously, for poor people. And she's been a poor person, and she's been struggling for housing for years, finally got into a house recently, and that's amazing. She's actually got some place to live, and that's impressive. And perhaps she can come down here and talk about welfare problems. Welfare looks like it's headed for the autopsy table, it's headed for the garbage can, and we're headed for some real hard times for poor people. And Becky, you may have been following this issue. There is a story in today's Sentinel about how the House passed its recent welfare, quote, reform bill.
You're going to reform us right out of existence here, these reformers on welfare. Why are they picking on the lowest, the least powerless group in society here?
Least powerful, you mean?
Least powerful, yes.
And yes, most verbally disadvantaged.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here to correct me.
Yes, I'm pleased to be here as well.
As opposed to where you used to be. What many people don't realize is that we're already getting the most cost-effective service for our dollar with the welfare as we have currently now. It's the least amount of money we could possibly pay and still have our poor children somewhat taken care of. Actually, I believe that welfare benefits as they currently are grossly inadequate, especially in Santa Cruz County where the cost of living is so unbelievably high. What any reform that has been suggested, you always hear this, let's put welfare mothers back to work. Well, exactly what is work-free about diapering a baby, doing laundry, cleaning, child care? I mean, if you're going to put your child in child care, you're going to pay a minimum of $2.50 an hour to have that child in child care. Obviously, it's considered work if somebody else does it. But if the actual natural parent does it, somehow it miraculously becomes work-free, not is not given the credit or the respect for the type of work that welfare mothers do in taking care of their own children, usually by themselves, at least if we look statistically. It is statistically mostly welfare mothers. There are a few welfare fathers, though, as well, and they experience the exact same circumstances when they're a single parent and trying to struggle by on this limited money. But what is it that about our society that has switched over that we think it's more important for welfare mothers to be making widgets somewhere rather than providing? Our children collectively are going to grow up and we're going to face whatever the repercussions of their what happened in their childhood and good, bad, or ugly. And it looks like these politicians here have found the welfare scapegoat once again. This is just a tiny part of the budget. It's less than 1% of the federal budget and less than 4% of the state budget goes in to support welfare and welfare mothers and children. I think it's something like 65% of the recipients of welfare are children. This is, I don't know what's going on. It must be this continuing pattern of hating the poor, hating people who are really struggling for survival. And you know, here we have a military budget that's gone over the top yet again in times of peace. Is this the kind of priorities that we want to have in this country? You know, we want to have more bombs, better bombs, bigger bombs, and this is only going to increase the number of homeless on the street, homeless families.
Well, I say food, not bombs. And that's what I was saying repeatedly for the last month in County Jail 8, which you covered quite well. You had me all over the air all the time, actually.
Yeah, those people who are hoping for a month of blissful silence from you were sadly mistaken.
Right, and indeed more important from the issues that I and you and Bob and others continue to raise about rights of the poor here in Santa Cruz and elsewhere. So much of what I could say actually has already been said because of your work and also the work of others who support the show. Gloria, Glad Eyes Gloria, who's constantly taping the show and all and other shows and sending tapes up north so that what we're doing here can be broadcast in San Francisco and the Bay Area and indeed occasionally as far away as Europe, because the Puna Bombs International Radio Network sends out tapes, including Santa Cruz stuff, to other countries. And Puna Bombs now has more than 130 chapters in different places. And indeed, the free radio network situation is just mushrooming. It's huge. More radio stations are opening up almost every day in different places. So it's really encouraging. But I'm kind of feeling like I should say something about what's happened in jail that maybe I haven't said before, though I'm not quite sure if there is any such thing that I haven't said before. I was due to serve a 60-day jail sentence for serving free food with food nut bombs in violation of a court order up there. And that court order is still in effect. It's an injunction similar to the Santa Cruz injunction, which makes it illegal for people to sleep at City Hall, have a sign larger than 14 inches, or cook, prepare, or store food there. The injunction against serving free food, though it's on the books, is not being used much in San Francisco, but it is still being used. As you probably know if you followed the show, there was an arrest the day after I went into jail. Keith McHenry, who's a co-founder of Food Not Bombs, was arrested at the Oatmeal and Raisin Vigil, which was a vigil that was held every day outside the courthouse when I was in jail. And was very effective, not just in, you know, bringing attention to my case and the case of other Food Not Bombers. Skidmark Bob mentioned in Whittier there's another case that's happening on the 30th of July. There's the case of Carrie Chandler, believe, will be going to trial for violating the state health and safety code law, which requires a food facility permit if you serve free food more than 3 times in 90 days. So they say. That's not really what it was intended to do. That's not how it reads, but it is used that way by city authorities, including Santa Cruz authorities, to harass food servers when they want to get rid of politically unpopular groups and they want to make sure that homeless people don't congregate in public areas, when they want to respond to merchant paranoia and political opportunism around election time. Indeed, it is election time coming up, as I was saying earlier on the show. So, jail for me came because all my appeals were rejected. I went to the judge who gave the original sentence, and he refused in spite of everybody's desire to have me not jailed, including the district attorney, and sent me to jail. I refused probation for reasons I've mentioned before. Probation.
And then that judge retired immediately after your case.
He did retire, yes. And we thought there was the feeling that he was called in because local judges didn't want to handle a case that might result in somebody being defeated at election time. You don't send people to jail for serving free food in a liberal San Francisco. At least that's how the myth goes. But
although Judge Robert Barkley is still working, even though he's retired, this is kind of an interesting thing. He is what is called on assignment.
He certainly was on assignment when he came after me. That's how it looked, I must say.
No. He was still on his regular shift when he came after you. And
now
he's in retirement. We're in collecting big, fat retirement dollars. And but then he's also on assignment where he works in the state of California courts, working as a judge in different courtrooms that he's been assigned post-retirement, and double dipping, shall we say. He gets wages for hearing cases all over the state. He's such a good judge. And then he also gets his retirement check. So this is a major loophole that is open for these judges, and very lucrative, and you're paying for it, taxpayers.
Right, and you of course paid for my incarceration, and you paid for the $10 million, yes, I'm not exaggerating, $10 million that they went after Food Not Bombs, spent to go after Food Not Bombs in the last 8 years, with over 1,000 arrests and endless court harassment and the destruction of food, the physical brutalization of Food Not Bombs members and homeless people. And of course all this is worse, you know, is bad enough, but you compare it to the number of matrix arrests, that is the arrests of homeless people for sitting down, sitting on a park bench with a backpack, sleeping, urinating in public, having an open container. Now, I threw in the urinating in public in order to sort of catch you there. Your thought is, well, no one should urinate in public, that's appropriate basis for an arrest. Yes, it is if there are restrooms. If there aren't any restrooms, then you have to obviously deal with the realities of the fact that people have basic needs and they have to meet them. And that
came up again in that Sentinel article earlier this week about the stairwell near Holy Cross.
Oh yeah, the mayor is jumping on his troll-busting high horse about homeless people peeing on the steps and congregating,
yeah. And lingering, which of course, you know, here, I don't know if this was between the hours of 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m., where homeless people can't sleep, they can't go to Holy Cross anymore because Mayor Rat can shut that down.
Has that been shut down? I heard rumors that there's still people there, or there's
three
some sort
people
of
in a vehicle, and that's it.
Are you sure you heard the recent update? Is that accurate?
That was the last report I heard.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well,
my point was about the, you know, according to Karen Clark's article, about the neighbors were complaining about people lingering on the stairwell. Well, they can't sleep because that's illegal. They'll get a $162 ticket. There is no shelter. Holy Cross has been shut down. And obviously, lingering is just existing somewhere. If homeless people exist somewhere, then that's also subject to neighbor complaints. And Mayor Rotkin's quick to go and help, you know, aid and abet those neighbors who are complaining.
Indeed. Mayor Rutkin's running for re-election, and this certainly, I hope this is the issue that defeats him, because he's certainly shown me that he seems to be acting in bad faith. He seems to be spreading misinformation. He seems to have a classist, hostile attitude towards poor people. He seems to be, the wrong kind of person to have in there. We need somebody else who understands the needs for basic rights.
His lack of compassion is just disgusting.
Yeah. Well, personal failings, shouldn't really be the basis for, denying someone a political position. If that person, is committed to a series of principles and wants to proceed and to initiate those principles. But I'm going to try to turn out a flyer about Mayor Mike and very specifically describe the particular instances where I feel he has demonstrated vicious hostility to homeless people, been interested in arresting people at city council who wanted to reclaim their proper time, lied to people about their right to be at city council, about the amount of time they were going to have at the mic, misrepresented the situation in Santa Cruz and other cities in order to avoid...
Oh, this is your lying dog comment.
Oh, yes, it's true. He's written, Mike and I have had extensive exchanges in the City on a Hill newspaper, the UCSC paper, in which his most recently called suggested that anyone who disagreed with his position was a lying dog. And his whole article was about me, so I kind of felt that he was maybe telling me to sit or possibly lie down or perhaps describing me. And I suppose better a lying dog than a lying mayor. I don't know. Hopefully we're not going to let sitting mayors lie. We can remove them. I have here an interesting newspaper which is sold up in San Francisco by homeless people called, it's actually not San Francisco, it's the East Bay. It's called Street Spirit. It's published about 18 issues now under the editorship of former Oakland Union of the Homeless leader, Sledgehammer Terry Messman. Terry has taken over literally millions of dollars worth of housing and had it transferred to poor people in the last decade with his Oakland Union of the Homeless along with Dorothy King. And he has, in the last year and a half, taken to writing a paper which is going to be covering Santa Cruz rather extensively in its next issue, and hoping we can get a bunch of them. This issue is volume 2, number 7, July 1996. It's a dollar if you see somebody selling it on the street. And occasionally we get vendors in Santa Cruz who come down and give it away or sell it away. And it's a good way for homeless people to make money. You need spare change, and it's real hard to say spare change. At least I find it real hard to say spare change. How easy is it for you to walk out and say, got any spare change, to strangers? I think that's the kind of work, if you ask me. Begging is a kind of work, and it's not that remunerative for most. But putting that aside, here's a story about called Rattling the Airtight Cage of Poverty, and it's protesters stir consciences in San Jose, pray for justice in soon-to-be-demolished house. You may remember earlier we had an interview with activist Sandy Perry from San Jose's Community Homeless Alliance, which is holding its meeting tomorrow, in case you want to go up there to the First Christian Church at 80 North 1st Street, or if you want to give them a call at 345-2353, that's happening. But Scott Wagers, who you will surely see up there, wrote this article, and this is what he said. Members of the Community Homeless Alliance and homeless women with children held a prayer vigil in the living room of a vacant house on June 13th in San Jose. This house was one of more than 79 units scheduled to be demolished last week to widen Highway 87 in San Jose. Among the participants were families from the Commercial Street Inn, a shelter that burned to the ground recently. One resident made an emotional plea for more affordable housing. Why can't these houses be used for people like us? Others present, including several homeless children, explored the house and backyard, marveling at the fact that these houses are going to be flattened within a month. Even television reporters were moved by the obvious dilemma, perfectly habitable housing sitting vacant while mothers and children are forced to live in unsafe shelters. Participants in the vigil joined hands in prayer, asking for courage and faith to continue the struggle. Others displaced recently have joined the ranks of the homeless. 200 residents of an apartment complex whose roof collapsed over a month ago have been unable to find comparable housing and are instead languishing in Red Cross shelters where workers are frustrated by the lack of long-term housing. Those who are unfortunate enough to lose their housing in San Jose for whatever reason are trapped in the chasm of institutionalized poverty and political indifference. Veteran activists state they have never seen the situation so urgent, but believe it is only a sign of things to come. For residents of the Guadalupe neighborhood, who are in danger of becoming homeless when they are evicted from their homes, things appear to be changing. After a series of meetings, prayer vigils, and legal maneuvers, residents have been able to avert the impending demolition for the time being. On Monday, June 26th, the residents met with Caltrans officials who have given a two-week extension, while attorneys from the public interest law firm await a response from Caltrans. Attorneys have been working fervently to pursue an injunction against the demolition of the houses because no viable relocation plan has been set in place. Since the San Jose Redevelopment Agency has contributed a significant amount of funding to the freeway project, it is obligated by state law to provide a comprehensive and realistic plan to replace the housing it destroys. Meanwhile, CHA, California or Community Homeless Alliance members, continue to expose the grave injustice of destroying housing while homeless men, women, and children struggle to extricate themselves from the airtight cage of homelessness. CHA's next action, a week of atonement and self-purification for homeless people, is a bold, imaginative strategy inspired by Mahatma Gandhi's concept of satyagraha, soul force, and Dr. Martin Luther King's concept of the beloved community. CHA will provide sanctuary for about 60 to 75 homeless people and their advocates at a sleep-in in St. Paul's United Methodist Church from July 8th through 12th this summer. During this week of atonement and self-purification, which has already happened, of course, participants will engage in intensive critical reflection, introspection, and self-purification during nightly meetings. Teach-ins, scripture study, meditation, small group meetings, storytelling, NA and AA meetings are all part of the agenda. CHA seeks to build a strong community among the homeless themselves and between the homeless and their advocates by creating a safe environment in which people can share ideas, fears, and aspirations. Each day, CHA will have a march, demonstration, or prayer vigil targeting local agencies who ignore the voice of the poor and oppressed. This action-reflection approach encourages both individual and social transformation without getting bogged down in empty, narcissistic self-reflection or strictly political efficacy. This action was inspired by the four steps of a nonviolent social movement as articulated by Dr. Martin Luther King. King's four steps include education, negotiation, self-purification, and direct action. King knew that in order to expose systemic evil, one must be disciplined, dignified, and compassionate. He eloquently wrote in Stride Toward Freedom, "God grant that as men and women all over the world struggle against evil systems, they will struggle with love in their hearts, with understanding, goodwill. Agape says you must go on with wise restraint and calm reasonableness, but you must keep moving." Similarly, Satyagraha seeks nonviolent change through repeated engagement that wears down the opponent yet sustains moral witness. For Gandhi, means and ends could not be separated for political expediency. What this means for our homeless movement in San Jose and poor people's movements in the U.S. is a dialectical union between political action and faith. Too often, movements become so focused on outward concessions that the moral impetus for the movement itself is lost in the politicization of goals. However, endless reflection can result in paralysis of analysis that characterizes many organizations. CHA's week-long event seeks creative and insightful approaches to ending homelessness from the vantage point of the homeless themselves, who will be guiding the strategy planning for the week's events. Members of various faith communities have been invited to attend, including Quakers, members of the Council of Churches, peace activists, and several local agencies that work with the homeless. At the end of the week, participants may target vacant houses and hotels as potential sites for takeovers. Hopefully this event, like CHA's 51-night sleepout last summer, will rattle the conscience of San Jose and engender a coalition of conscience that will truly be able to bridge the gulf between promise and fulfillment. Finally, on July 4th, CHA will sponsor a picnic in the park in honor of Roy Stevens, a formerly homeless man who has been an outspoken advocate and tireless volunteer for the homeless for the last 10 years in San Jose. We expect more than 500 people to attend. Support the homeless sleep-in. CHA invites you to participate in this special event or help with donations for the sleep-in or the picnic in the park. And this, again, has already happened July 8th through the 12th. But again, it's interesting because simultaneous things seem to be happening in different cities here. And the number for more information about all this is, get your pencils, 345-2353. That's the Community Homeless Alliance up in San Jose. Well, what's happening here in Santa Cruz? Let's kind of return to Santa Cruz for a minute. As you know, we have a benefit tonight. That's going on at the Pacific Cultural Center at 1307 Seabright at 7. And then there's going to be tabling downtown for Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you want this radio station to continue, word is it's in financial problems again, and you need to put a little money where our mouths are, pretty much. So come on down and do some tabling right across from Woolworths. If you haven't got any money, just help out with a little time. I think there's T-shirts available, stickers, flyers, and it's always airtime, too. As I said, if you want to be on this show, if you want to talk about civil rights for the poor, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Leave a message for me. If you want that message to go on the air, state that, and we'll put that message on the air. If you want to be on the air yourself, we'll get together, and we'll probably do that. It's almost our standards here are... Well, our standards are high, but our admission policy is open. So we want you to, you know, say good things, say things that make sense, say things that are pertinent and pointed. But what you say is up to you. I don't censor people on this show. You've just heard my reading from Street Spirit here, a new, fairly new newspaper. It started about 2 years ago. It's kind of the East Bay Street Sheet, and who knows, maybe we'll even have a Street Shit Sheet out soon. That's the publication I used to write and may write again. When I got out of jail, and that was on Monday, actually 2 days after I got out of jail, we had a rally on the 17th, a rally to free me, and of course I was already free, but we were also concerned, more importantly, with freeing the thousands, up to 10,000, I'm told, the San Francisco homeless, actually 10 to 12,000. Who every night face the threat of arrest for falling asleep up there. Now, it is true that District Attorney Terrence Hellinan in San Francisco did provide amnesty for not only Matrix tickets under Jordan, tickets for sleeping outside, in essence, tickets for being homeless, tickets for almost everything but, I think, drunk in public and urinating and defecating, which... As I said, it's wrong to ticket someone for that if there are no facilities, but it is a health and safety hazard, so there's a conflict there. San Francisco is trying to deal with this by putting in self-washing toilets, French toilets, that I'm not quite sure how effective they are. I haven't gotten a report, and if any of our listeners know anything about those potties, we can perhaps get the word from you, and you can give us all the straight shit, so to speak, and we will... air that information in our next show. We had an interesting rally on the 17th. We had numerous speakers, and one of those speakers was Bob King, who's part of the Marin Homeless in Action. Marin County is the richest county in the state. It's the county directly north of the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, and they've been harassing homeless people too, particularly in San Rafael, which is the county seat of Marin County. Bob King has an article in Street Spirit. He spoke very eloquently, and I'm going to play his speech, I believe, on Monday. You'll be able to hear him speak, but here is his written voice. Again, this is about a month old since the deadline delays it, even though it's the July issue. It's older than we might want, but it's still worth listening to. And let's hear what Bob King has to say on Marin's war on the poor, which I'm going to read now. San Rafael tried to bully St. Vincent's Dining Hall into relocating to an unacceptable site near the city dump. That's the headline by Bob King, and here's the story. It is a heart, this holocaust I walk in. O golden child, the world will kill and eat. These lines from Mary's Song by Sylvia Plath capture the present feeling in Marin County toward its poor. The city of San Rafael is trying to close the doors of Marin County's only free dining room in an attempt to appease the downtown merchants. What a holocaust for the poor. Marin's golden children will be sacrificed for Marin's golden calf, property values. The war in Marin has been and remains one in which property values hold sway over human values. In the present struggle, property owners around the B Street area in downtown San Rafael are meeting constantly to upgrade their property values by driving the poor out. This means closing St. Vincent de Paul's dining hall so that more upscale businesses can move in. St. Vincent's is more than a dining hall. It is the heartbeat of the poor, for here the most downtrodden can come to not only eat, but share in a larger community of being. Here there is a blessing of food, of music, of true friendship. But this living jewel will be served into the furnace of the merchant's greed if the city of San Rafael has its way. Led by Vice Mayor Paul Cohen, San Rafael is now proposing to shut down St. Vincent's as a public nuisance. This is the outcome of 5 weeks of a mediation process between the city of San Rafael and St. Vincent's, in which the city attempted to bully St. Vincent's into relocation to an unacceptable site near the city dump. The dump or the furnace? Is there a difference? In the past few months, San Rafael has employed the following bully boy tactics. Hired two beat cops to chase downtown homeless people from coffee houses and parks. Stationed two patrol cars across the street from St. Vincent's to issue jaywalking tickets. Intensified night patrols that target sleepers in cars and RVs, as well as campers, to move on because sleeping is illegal if you're too poor to have a home. Sent undercover police into St. Vincent's to arrest drug dealers. An attorney for Legal Aid of Marin said police were enforcing jaywalking laws against homeless people in a discriminatory and irrational manner that violated the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Homeless people have been told they are not wanted in Marin, that they must move on to either San Francisco or Oakland. Marin simply does not want poor people. Recently, a local law firm has joined forces with the Bank of Marin and downtown businesses to launch a homeless bashing petition drive and a 1984-style surveillance campaign. The law offices of Plasteris and Forsbiad launched the anti-homeless petition under the auspices of a newly formed group called San Rafael Action. In a June 6th letter, Plasteris and Forsbiad boast, "We have collected physical evidence, photographs, and videotapes to demonstrate to local officials the worsening activity in the B Street area." Translation, they have sent video cameras to conduct a Big Brother surveillance of homeless people without their knowledge or consent. Currently, my group, Homeless in Action, is working with Legal Aid on these issues. This surveillance of homeless people will be part of our legal action. The letter from Plasteris and Forsbiad also states, "We have established a bank account at Bank of Marin. The Bank of Marin has generously agreed to match donations to San Rafael Action on a dollar-for-dollar basis. A wealthy, powerful bank has stooped so low as to bankroll a bullying attack on the poorest citizens. It speaks volumes about how wealth is worshipped in Marin and used to attack and degrade the poor." Ironically, St. Vincent's itself has a large account at Bank of Marin. When they heard that their bank was financing the anti-homeless effort, St. Vincent's officials told the bank officers in no uncertain terms that they would withdraw all their money if the Bank of Marin didn't cease this practice. A lawsuit against the city of San Rafael is very likely on civil rights infractions. As it appears now, St. Vincent's will seek through Legal Aid, a large law firm, to countersue the city. Also, Homeless in Action will organize demonstrations on behalf of the Golden Children of St. Vincent's. Truly this community, this heart, is a holocaust that I walk in. For those who want to help Homeless in Action in their struggle for justice, call 415-454-3234 or 459-5009. Again, these are numbers in Marin County, 415-454-3234 or 415-459-5009. That's Homeless in Action, the homeless support group, homeless civil rights group in Marin County. You've been listening to an article by Bob King, Marin's War on the Poor, published in the July issue of Street Spirit. Well, I'm expecting this show to end shortly because our next talk show host, Save the Trees Dean, is due in here at noon, at least according to this schedule. Dean is often late, however, which gives me added opportunity to whip out my own stuff and ramble on at some length. So what I'm going to do now is play another interview with attorney Catnip Kate Wells on the update from Santa Cruz and the Santa Cruz legal situation. So stay with us and listen.
It's nothing for the radio, though. I don't. I mean, it's just. Anyway.
So we're on the line to Catnip Kate Wells, the infamous attorney of record, or one of them, for the City Hall Sleepers Vigil. Hi, Kate.
Hi. This is not of major significance to anyone but me, but I'll tell you anyway.
This is sort of the inside story of the lawyer game. You've been working on what's called a demurrer, which is a challenge to the constitutionality of the sleeping ban and the practice of citing people at the City Hall Sleepers protest selectively, things of that sort.
That's correct. And after working on it for I've worked on it for weeks, but the actual writing of it, I was maybe 18 hours into it, which I had left aside all of Wednesday to do, since it was due on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And at about 6 o'clock Wednesday night, I all of a sudden my screen went blank in front of me.
Oh, no.
And there was somebody working on the building, evidently, who had accidentally cut the power. And I heard about these horror stories of people losing things, but...
you didn't believe them, yes.
So I hadn't been saving it, and...
It was gone.
It was gone.
Okay.
I know. It's just... And then, on top of that, the reason I had been working so hard to get it done early is because my cousin... from